Welcome to the Thinklings Podcast, a conversation where good thoughts help renew the mind with the Word of God. I'm Charlie Carter, and I'm here with Tim Little and Andy Stearns. Let's jump into the conversation.
I'll tell you later.
Intentionally.
Get it out right then.
You have Voltaire.
Oh. Yeah.
Beautiful. Did I say I was going to do Candide? Oh, good. I'm glad. I was wanting to do it when you were here.
I don't
so what I was going to tell you earlier, Andy,
I just brought it in case
that I waited to tell you, was that there's another podcast I listen to that just turns the microphones on, and it's just conversation, and then all of a sudden they've started their episode. So with that, I say, welcome to the Thinklings Podcast for an episode that's already started and just
that
caught all
fantastic.
That wonderful banter.
Welcome, listeners.
I don't know what you guys were talking about over there, but
Voltaire.
Yeah, which we're going to talk about in a little bit.
Yeah.
Charlie, I have to say, your opener ideas are always the best. Like, I love them. I think
are we recording?
Good.
Yes, we're already recording.
Yeah, okay. Tim's like,
do you want to say welcome to the Thinklings Podcast?
Welcome to the Thinklings Podcast, listener.
And as you've already heard, we do have the fourth Thinkling.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You know, I was... The Scott Annual references, we're starting to outnumber the Dr. Boyd references on the podcast. So
oh, Houston, we had a problem.
I thought I better show back up and just make my presence felt. You know, Scott may have written a glowing endorsement for your book, but let's not forget who proofread your
yes.
book.
Ooh. Yes, absolutely. They're going to hear all the guts today. So Tim, can you look at the back of Josh's mic and just turn the gain down just a little bit?
Oh boy, okay.
And while we do that, let me tell you what we're going to do in this episode. So we're going to do our books and business like normal, and then we're going to talk about reading and writing plans in 2025. We have a bunch of things we're going to do before that. So first, Andy, what are we drinking?
We are drinking Onyx Labs Kenyan. It's like a double A. I can't pronounce the region it's from, but it is glorious.
And then we have 7 weeks coffee from the Foresters. Thank you, Foresters. This is a Dominican light roast. It is not as fruity. It is more earthy. They have the tasting notes as vanilla, almond, and sugar cane. So very nice bag.
And I'm
of
drinking
light
out
roast.
Of my Forester Tree Service mug also. So I feel like it's a good morning.
What mug is Dr. Boyd drinking out of?
Land of coffee and some lakes too. A Minnesota mug, Caribou coffee.
Oh, Caribou.
Is that your mug?
Yes, it is representing my.
He brought it.
Homeland.
Well, the motherland.
That's right.
All right. And then, Tim, do you have some?
So, with the bookstore?
Yep.
Yeah, that. Yeah. So, this is our first episode that we have. I don't know. I can't. I mean, anyway. So, this is our first recorded episode that Charlie's book is officially in the bookstore. So several of you probably already know, several of you have already picked up. That's great. Awesome. But, it is there. The ebook is coming. In fact, when this airs, maybe it will be out and available. Well, it's not, it won't release until the middle of February, but, and we're talking about some audiobook versions too. So as you think about those things, you can even pray for us as all of those things are a lot of hoops to jump through, but the print book is in the bookstore. And if you would, and I would encourage you to buy it from the bookstore, not from Amazon. It is on Amazon, but that is not our inventory. So those are print-on-demand books. They're an inferior quality. I don't think they're as nice. So pick up the copies from the bookstore because we used a different printer for those ones.
Yeah, I didn't know that until this morning, that if you buy it on Amazon, you're not getting the really nice copy.
So we use a print-on-demand distributor that also makes it available internationally. And so that just creates greater availability for the resource. So that's why I do it that way. But yeah, they're all print on demand using various different manufacturing facilities around the world.
That's really interesting.
And you also want to mention that guy.
I do want to mention that guy.
Do you remember?
No. Oh, yeah.
You're
going to
talk
right.
about Brian Collins.
Yeah, so
email?
Brian Collins wrote us an email.
I'm really producing this one. I'm glad I pulled up the stinking thing.
All right. So Brian Collins wrote us in. I talked about the fear of the Lord, and Brian wrote in some really helpful stuff about Moberly. I mentioned Walter Moberly. He's a scholar. I picked up some of his books. And Brian mentions that he's definitely not theologically conservative, but he's found him helpful as well. And then he also references Daniel Block, an article, The Fear of the Lord, The Theological Tie That Binds Deuteronomy and Proverbs, in a book called The Triumph of Grace. So I always love it when others send me additional resources that are along the lines of what I'm studying through. He has a quote from it: "The Old Testament use of fear of God is thus more or less equivalent in function to the New Testament's use of various forms of believe, trust, and have faith to depict appropriate human response to God." So basically, I had Moberly, and I was pursuing Moberly along those lines, and Brian sent me this quote from Block, who's basically saying the same thing. So whenever you find other scholars that are kind of substantiating things that you're studying, it's always very helpful, especially if you're going to start writing. That's one of the things about community, and even academic community, building off of the people that are your friends and building one another up to get published. Brian has some other stuff, a favorite book of his, My Side of the Mountain, and he had some other stuff. Maybe we should visit that. He talks about Peace Like a River and Sound of Music in his email as well. So anyway, thanks a lot for writing in, Brian. We always appreciate that. And I missed that one on our talk episode. So I just found it, and I just wanted to mention that. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, Brian has some of our more substantive emails that he sends in. So love getting those.
And then just a note on coffee tasting. So we were talking about, does friendship make coffee taste better? And we were saying, nope. It's coffee's objective.
Oh, boy.
So I got a good little bit of feedback.
Read this slowly.
Okay. And this is from our friend George from Georgia, who, by the way, has the finest taste in fountain pens as well. But here's his comment. He said, "I was just listening to the Thinklings, and I have to disagree with Charlie. Friendship does make coffee taste better. He tries to treat, quote, tastes better, quote, as an objective thing, and, quote, feel good, quote, as a personal experience. I would challenge him to show that, quote, tastes better, quote, is not also a matter of personal experience and thus not affected by friendship." And then he did put a smiley face. Charlie, what say ye?
I have no comment.
Oh, you're just,
man, he's off air. He had comments, people, but he is
no, that's not true. It is definitely true.
You're a piece of work.
Hey, George, thanks for writing in.
Yeah, George is a good dude, even though he has thoughts. All right, are we ready to do that thing we always do?
Books and business.
Let's talk about some books. And is this our first one in 2025?
Yeah. I mean, last week was what, the tall? No, it's Jewish history. That kept getting pushed back.
This is the first time we've recorded it in 2025. Okay, thank
you. So yeah, this is the first time we've actually done it. But yeah, actually, the Jewish history is going to go out today.
First recording of the new year.
Yeah. So who's going first? Let's just go around the table. Tim, you want to go first?
So I stumbled upon a book in the bookstore, Candide or Candide. I don't know how to say it.
Candide.
Candide. Candide by Voltaire. And so that Dr. Boyd, I was kind of hoping to save this one for when he was on air to get his thoughts on it. It was actually my son that found it. And I was like, I don't think I want you reading Voltaire before me. and so I was like, I think I'll read that first. And the book actually has some illustrations in it, which are obscene. So there's other issues with it there too. So anyway, if you do ever read this, I'd recommend reading a non-illustrated edition. Also, it is very immoral. There's a lot of actual sexual assault too, like a lot, because he's kind of just showing the depravity of humans and how the world doesn't turn everything into good. He's basically riffing off of the church and ripping on the church and the idea that God works everything out for good.
Seriously?
Yeah. So the funny thing is, like, he almost forgets the line about "for those who love him."
Really?
Yeah. You know? So that's kind of like the big push. So there's this one guy who's naive, Candide, and he grows up in a German castle. And he has a great life. And then he is caught flirting with the king's daughter and kicked out. And then it's like, and flirting's a a nicer word. And so there's a long series of events where he goes from tragedy to tragedy and tragedy to tragedy to basically disprove that things don't work out for good. So he finds this one place called El Dorado, and in El Dorado, it's like the scientific community, and it's like heaven. It's everything's good. Everything works well. The roads are made of gold. They're dust, and diamonds are everywhere. And he takes some of that back to the real world when he leaves El Dorado, but then he loses it all through various misfortunes, just to prove again the point that things don't turn out for good. I don't know. That's like a quick snapshot of an edition of the book. But yeah, what else do I want to say about this thing? Yeah, I was like, how's he going to wrap this thing up? He wraps it up with them basically on a farm. Like all of the main characters. Oh, this is another thing. And a lot of people are like, oh, and this person died. And then all of a sudden later on, they're back alive. And he's like, how in the world did you live? And then through this bizarre series of circumstances, the person ended up not dying. So like the one guy gets hung and he saw him be hung. And then he shows up. He's like, how did you not die? Well, I didn't know how to hang people. And I only passed out. And then they pulled me down and found out they woke me up. And there's a bunch of that kind of thing. I almost wonder if he's riffing on the resurrection. Yeah. So, but at the end, he kind of ends on a farm and they kind of paint the good life as just being simple folk on a farm. Do you have any thoughts or?
Yeah, I mean, I would add, so Voltaire is a critic of the church. He's a deist. He's writing in the 18th century, prolific writer. This is a tale that's meant to be ascending up of particularly Leibniz's idea that we live in the best of all possible worlds. So he's particularly focusing on Gottfried Wilhelm Leibniz, the mathematician. Oh. But he is critiquing this idea. Pangloss is the philosopher that Candide has been tutored by. And right. Pangloss's philosophy is that we live in the best of all possible worlds and that all works out for the best. Mm-hmm. And particularly what Voltaire is, well, he's responding to some historical events as well. In Lisbon, Portugal, in the 1730s, I believe, or maybe I'm off on that date, but in Lisbon, there's this famous earthquake that kills tens of thousands of people. And Voltaire wrestles with that, you know, this idea of, do we live in the best of all possible worlds when such things happen?
Yeah, he talked about that. Mm-hmm.
He's particularly, though, critiquing a kind of provincialism that Pangloss is guilty of and that Candide is guilty of as well. In the introduction to my copy, the introducer says, the book's first onslaught on optimism finds the doctrine in its crassest and most comfortable form, a combination of ignorance and complacency, which asserts that all is well everywhere because I'm doing pretty well in the tiny corner of the world I happen to know. And so part of what's happening there is you have this very provincial Candide and Pangloss, and it's easy for Pangloss and for Candide to say that we live in the best of all possible worlds when life is very comfortable in the castle. But then they're thrust out into the real world and they experience, as you said, horrible tragedy after horrible tragedy. Certain characters, as you mentioned, get raped every single day for a series of years, and they die, and he is joking about the resurrection. They come back to life and all that. I don't know. I've struggled a little bit with how to read the ending of it. I kind of find it as maybe a precursor to existentialism. So we live in this world of absurdity and incredible suffering, and the only thing we can do is cultivate our own garden. That's kind of the final line.
He's on a farm or whatever.
Of the novel, which is to say, let's stop this philosophizing and let's just, the world is absurd, but we need to make meaning of it somehow. So let's just cultivate our own garden. But it's an important work, I think, to consider. And as far as I've taught it at various places.
Yeah, you have. Okay. Huh. So your edition there might be a better one to actually pick up. Mine is just a mass market paperback that stumbled into the bookstore with some who knows whatever's library. So anyway, cool. Well, thanks for that input. That's helpful.
So what would you rank it, Tim?
I mean, you know, I thought he was an atheist. So that's interesting that he's a deist, but I don't know if I would want to. I think this would go on a shack stack normally, except that it's like a very influential piece of literature that's in, I don't know if it's in the Great Book series, but Voltaire is there because Voltaire's people talk about him all the time.
I need to look in my copy.
Right. So as far as like a ranking is concerned, there's just a lot of components in this that are for an adult audience, and it's meant to be read as a satire. So those are factors that have to enter. I don't think I want to rank it.
Okay.
Just a quick thing to add to, I teach this alongside Leo Tolstoy's The Death of Ivan Ilyich.
Oh.
And I ask students to consider what each work has to say about suffering. Because for Voltaire, suffering seems to be something that's relatively meaningless. There's not a lot of growth in Candide other than to reject his tutor's philosophy in the end.
Yeah.
But for Tolstoy, the suffering is redemptive. And so kind of contrasting those works.
Yeah. It's good.
All right. My book is How to Read a Book, Advice for Christian Readers by Andrew David Nicelli. It's published by Canon Press. And I have to say, it's a hardcover and it's much better quality than the other Canon Press books I have that are paperback. Those are
pretty rough.
Yeah. So Canon Press does kind of what we do in that they'll do print on demand. So they'll do their printing. So if you ever like, ooh, there's a Canon Press book that I like, you want to buy it from them and get one of their early printings, because then after they're out, a lot of times it goes to print on demand and you get trashy books. Okay. So buy Charlie's book from the bookstore.
Yeah, so Nicelli is professor of systematic theology and New Testament at Bethlehem College and Seminary in Minneapolis. And he also was D.A. Carson's research manager for a number of years. I think maybe he says 9 years in total in the book. As the title suggests, he's writing in the vein of Mortimer Adler, who came out with a book titled How to Read a Book in 1940, and then it was updated in 1972 with Charles Van Doren. The subtitle matters, though. Nicelli says this is advice for Christian readers. It also differs from Adler in a couple of important ways. It's far more succinct. Adler's book is over 400 pages. Nicelli's, the actual body of the text, is 160, and then he has a few appendices that push it just over 200 pages. Nicelli says that his scope is broader, and by that he means that he includes reading for pleasure, which Adler basically is arguing that we read for understanding. It's also updated. You know, Adler's book is over 50 years old. And this one deals with technology. Nicelli is a believer in audiobooks, that counts as reading, ooh, using audiobooks.
Collectively, we all looked at Charlie right now.
Listening. Shots fired.
Hey, I have no problem counting it. I have a semantic problem with saying that you are reading when you are actually listening.
Keep going.
Right. And he addresses that a little bit. For the record, I'm a big fan of audiobooks, listening to them.
I am too.
Enjoying them.
I just don't consider myself to be reading when I'm listening.
That's so great.
So the book
I'll
is
come
organized.
Back to that when it gets to my book here.
The book is organized around four questions, and these are the four chapters. Why should you read? How should you read? What should you read? And when should you read? And as those titles make evident, it's a very practically oriented book giving practical advice. But he says early on, Christ is Lord of everything. So this is, he's addressing his subtitle. It's advice for Christian readers. He says, Christ is Lord of everything. That includes reading. When Christ is your king, he transforms how you approach reading, why you read, how you read, what you read, and when you read. And so just a couple of takeaways from the book. For me personally, reading matters. So we should be intentional about it. At several points, he discusses being intentional about your reading, having a reading plan. If you think about it, there's, 4 million books published every year. There's something like close to 200 million books in existence. If you read a book, he says early on, if you read a book every 2 weeks, and over for 50 years, you'll read something like 1,250 books. And so that's a grain of sand on the California coastline. That's what Nicelli says. And so we have to be judicious. We have to be discerning about what we read. Be intentional. And so he has lots of really helpful advice about reading plans and setting aside time in your schedule for reading. reading multiple books at once, because sometimes in the evening you don't always feel like reading a certain book. So if you have multiple books going at the same time, you'll read, because you might feel like reading something lighter or something heavier depending on your mood. The other takeaway for me was, and this I think would be helpful for our students or for people that are working with students, he encourages us to read at different levels. And this is part of Adler's book as well. Adler has, I think, four levels of reading: elementary, inspectional, analytical, and syntopical. Nocelli boils those down into three, and he gives them more accessible names. So he has surveying, macro reading, and micro reading.
That is so much better. That is so much better.
Yeah. And I think it's important for students to recognize this, that you don't have to read every single book in the same way. Surveying is maybe spending a half hour to an hour with a book, reading portions, looking through it, and you might be able in that time to have a grasp of what that book is about and to maybe walk away from it and say, that's enough, or maybe I need to look at this further. And then you would move on to macro reading, which is to read everything in the book, but to read it relatively quickly. And then micro reading is to really to dig in and to analyze what one is reading. So I think of like Tim or Andy or Charlie or myself, even in areas that we're supposedly specialists, it doesn't take long to figure out what a particular author is adding to the conversation. So you just survey those works and move on. So that's important. One area I wish he would address a little bit more is how do we retain what we read? And I understand that's not the purpose of the book. He does address a couple of places the idea that you need to be able to express what you've read and write about what you've read. That's a way to retain it. And the reality is that we're just not going to remember what we read, and that's fine. You know, you don't remember what you ate for breakfast 2 days ago, but you needed it and it sustained you.
Yeah.
Reading is similar to that. So just general thoughts. It's written very clearly and winsomely. He loves lists. So you'll have, you know, 11 tips about this, and you go through those 11 tips, then another list. That's helpful, I think. I like that. It's he has excellent quotations, many of them from C.S. Lewis. I thought of you many times, Charlie, because he quotes from An Experiment in Criticism a number of times. And then, as I said earlier, practical advice abounds. And so it's a helpful source. I'm thinking about perhaps having freshmen read it in my introduction to English composition classes, just to kind of get their taste for reading to grow. Yeah, excellent book.
So then we will often rank our books on the podcast on a scale of 1 to 10, but 1 means like there's something good in it. So it's like all is that how you describe it? Like,
yeah, it's a 0 or a negative would be the Shack Stack, where it's like, no, there's no value. You shouldn't read it. So Tim kind of came to that conclusion with Voltaire there, where it's like, there's a very, very small sliver of where there's value for people.
Right.
And so then this book, how good do you caliber it?
Yeah, I'm.
As I think we've all read Adler's How to Read a Book, correct?
I have not.
Yeah.
Pagan.
I have.
I have. Yeah. I actually had your copy for years.
Listener, I couldn't find my copy. I read especially the first like 56 pages in that 72 edition are just great. And I use it for an assignment, Intro to Bible. And I was looking for my book for years. I'm like, man, where did that go? And then Charlie graduated and came back with it and a clean copy with annotations. It was really great.
I would say I do this with some reluctance, but understanding the scale, I would probably rank it a 5. And I would do that because I think it's a wonderful book. I would recommend people own it. It's short. It's an easy read. It gives practical advice. Nothing in it is, you know, incredibly insightful or brand new or, you know, noteworthy in that regard. But so a 5 is not to slight the work at all. It's just to say it's a good, easy, practical book to have.
Yep.
It's a great book to pick up and begin your reading for 2025. If you think through a book on reading to help be a better reader, especially if you struggle reading, this would be a great one to start with. Get somebody that can hold you accountable and begin reading better in 2025.
Yeah, we'll circle back to that when we get to our reading plans, but there's not a lot of books that we own that justify why we read. There's just a lot of books we have because we know we're supposed to read. So that's a very unique sector that that book's kind of hitting. Like if somebody asked you, wink, wink, this is foreshadowing, why should you read? That would give you answers to why you should read. So anyway.
I love your foreshadowing, Charlie.
Yeah.
It's very, it's not, it's hard to miss.
Yeah. That's actually one of the, oh no, we don't need to talk about that. We don't need to go back to Charlie's fourth grade experience.
All right. For my books and business, I'm going to give a Booksing Day update.
Ooh.
So Booksing Day was awesome. I got the great books from you, Tim, sort of. And so what I decided is on Booksing Day, I would read the first edition titled The Great Conversation by Hutchins or Hutchinson or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then I read I Cheerfully Refuse. And then I also read The Phantom Tollbooth. We're over halfway. That book is absolutely great. And you're right. If you hadn't told me, I would have done this anyways, but voicing the characters was glorious. And most of them have some sort of an English accent, except for the dog. And then for Christmas, I got Adorning the Dark by Andrew Peterson, which I had listened to previous to our interviewing him, but I've never physically read it. And so, man, I really like the physical reading. It takes more time, but I capture differently and interact differently. So on Booksing Day, I literally read one chapter from all of my books, and it was a great day. I'll highlight Andrew Peterson's Adorning the Dark. It's really good. If you want to write, or if you're creative at all, if you have anything you're trying to produce, it's just a book where you feel like he's a kindred spirit. Even he is describing how there are some people who like, you got to do this, and it's a very planned out, thought out way of producing. And he's like, man, sometimes I'm just doing something and I don't know if it's good until the last second. And then it ends up being good. And you're like, God, I was just trying my artist. And so there's parts of it where I think it's very real. And so Booksing Day was great. And kudos to Canada for starting us off on that holiday idea. And I would say, I mean, kudos to Canada for someone resigning yesterday also, you know. Trudeau. Oh, wait. Ta-da. Well, I can't remember what I said there. And so anyways, yes, Booksing Day was great. And I'm going to give a new ranking to Adorning the Dark when I finish it, but I think it'll be pretty high. So
I love how you give Canada the credit for Booksing Day.
Well, they started us, and then we just took it that next step that needed it to be taken.
Also a very broadly British holiday.
Oh, do you want to know the history of it? Because I looked it up. Because I had people saying, you should do Jaka Blaka Flood or whatever that Norwegian
is. Let's save all Booksing Shade for like next December.
Okay, I'll do a history of Boxing Day.
Yeah.
Next year. And listen, once this holiday's been around for 200 years, no one's going to know because it's not that.
So, all of the rumblings of you should have just done this holiday. Well, if I had have taken that name and added one O to it, it would have been way less fun.
And who can pronounce that? Every time I'm like, how do you say it?
Booksing is so much fun.
It's way better.
Booksing Day.
Charlie, way to go.
Okay, so books and business. Your kids are enjoying...
They love
Phantom Tollbooth.
And they get the jokes. So you know, Mooses with Bazookas.
Yeah.
So we tried that and I had to keep explaining the puns, but this one, they're all getting it. The witch. Mm. I'm a witch. And they're like, with the spells.
Witch.
No, I'm not a witch. I'm a witch. And I thought, oh, I'm gonna have to explain the spelling to Abby. And she caught it and laughed. And so it was really good. Side note.
Very joyful book.
Jesse, who Melissa and Jesse get together regularly, found out that Evan's a reader, and I forgot she had given Evan that book like 3 weeks before, and he hadn't read it yet. I'm like, you can't read it. We're going to read this one as a family. So he loaned that copy to grandma.
Yes. So Booksing, I did read a chapter from all y'all's Booksing gifts as well.
We got an all y'all's.
Yeah. We'll come back to, how do I say the guy's name for your book? DeBrian?
DeBrian.
DeBrian?
I don't know.
DeBrian.
That's interesting where he talks about, you know, war of words, and he talked about authenticity is the word number one. And that really prompted some good thinking for me. And then there's some, there's always conversations of what I'm reading with people at work. And so that's fun. But I'm going to talk about, so we're going to get into reading plans in a little bit, but I'm reading The Brothers Karamazov. Looking at Boyd to get pronunciation.
Karamazov.
It's about some brothers. I know that. But that's kind of my main book in January that I'm focusing on. And don't have much to say about it yet. I'm trying to, it's actually, we mentioned George earlier.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one that, like, 3 years ago, when we were kind of just starting to explore Ransom Cycle on the mm-hmm. podcast, he critiqued us and said, you shouldn't read a narrative and dissect it right away. You should just try to read the story and then mm-hmm. think about it. So I'm trying diligently to just read the story and understand the characters and what's going on. And it does draw you and pull you, and you start understanding their desires and kind of what they're trying to do. And then, so I have, a while back, I decided that I didn't want to pay for Audible anymore. I've changed on that. I do have Audible again. It's so useful. And so, but there's, with one Audible credit, you could get all of Dostoevsky's works. So you're talking like almost 200 hours of Dostoevsky, including The Brothers K and all of his other great books too, for one credit, which I thought was a massive steal.
That's especially when you have a drive.
What I'm doing here with Brothers K, hush you.
The Philistine over there is mocking you.
What I'm...
I don't know if I can handle that.
What does it say about you that classics of literature bore you, Tim? So
200 hours.
Over a lifetime.
Look, I think we have a quorum at the table saying you're right, Charlie. So yeah. Keep going.
So anyway, so what I'm doing with Brothers K is I'm trying to physically read it in the evenings. And then in the mornings or other times, I will like listen back through what I've already read. And it is a very different experience. It's a completely different mental activity to listen. And you said like the way you capture it is so, and it's much easier to listen. And I'm tempted to just listen to the chapter, but there's something to know. You're going to sit down with the book and read the next, 15, 20 pages. And so in that way, I'm trying to read it twice.
Mm.
And so I'm trying to save all the analytics for the listen. And cause you already know what happened in the chapter, and then you're kind of backing through it and considering, but it's long. There's a lot. I'm not really sure what I think at all yet, but that's kind of my main book for January that I'm working on.
Well, I really like your listening and reading thing. I could see that being really helpful. And when I'm doing my whole little fake snore thing, part of that's because like we were on a trip and I was trying to listen to Tale of Two Cities by Dickens. Not happening.
That's a very apt.
And all I can envision is something similar with 200 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when I first got it on audiobook, you've heard me, like, there's a lot of times where I've listened to Lewis or Tolkien, like, as I go to bed. Mm-hmm. And man, Brothers K was, man, it would put you to sleep. But Out of the Silent Planet, if you go back and listen to my first thoughts of Out of the Silent Planet, I was like, this is so boring. I just can't get into this.
Amen.
And my tune completely changed on that. And so I'm very hopeful that this is going to be that same way. Like once you wade into it a ways and you start really thinking about what he's doing, you're going to find more. But I think Lewis as an author is probably more fruitful than Dostoevsky. I don't, I'm looking at Boyd across the table and he's given me no visual cues.
Well, Dostoevsky is Eastern Orthodox.
Yes.
And so Lewis is going to be probably closer to where we are in certain areas, of course.
And there's a lot of religious themes in the book. I'm sure in all of his writings, but there's a lot of very direct religious, like they're talking about communism, socialism, and well, isn't that just like what Christians believe? Like Christ is going to come and bring a totalitarian state on the earth, right? And, and that's what they're discussing. And one of the brothers is an atheist, but a very logical thinker who's like written this treatise of why it should be one way. And then there's this like monk at the monastery who's like, well, you don't even really believe what you're writing, dude. And kind of creates a problem for of On with that. And so there's a lot of religious themes that you start having, you're forced to think about them as you learn the characters.
Yeah. And Yvonne has a conversation with the Grand Inquisitor, which some have taken that out of the novel and published that alone because it's this philosophical, deep conversation. So be preparing for that. Yeah. I
haven't gotten there yet.
That's called
It's been a long time. It's been a long time since I've read it. But I seem to remember the brothers, each one of them kind of represents Dostoevsky in some way. And one of the questions that the novel is asking is which of these brothers is culpable for the father's death? And so
it's a
little bit of a mystery in that sense, trying to figure that out.
Yeah.
So that's one of my struggles with some of these things, even like Candide. I mean, I'm reading through this and I'm like, I know he's mocking somebody when he's saying this or doing that, but we're 200 whatever years from removed from the situation. Yeah. And sometimes they had little footnotes explaining he's mocking one of his opponents here. His opponent here is this person and various things like that. So much of it just kind of flies over your head. And it strikes me as something similar where being in that historical setting, you know, being so far removed makes it difficult to understand exactly what. And then it's like, what kind of reading are we doing? Coming back to like Nicelli's idea. Mm-hmm. It's like, I just want to enjoy a fun story. Well, we're not doing that. That's for sure.
I will, in defense of it, I do think you can read it for story's sake. The characters are compelling. And once you kind of learn the three brothers and then the dad, and you kind of get a grasp of that's kind of the main orbit that you're learning. There's a lot of other, you know, Rakitin and like all these other Musif and like these other characters on the fringe a little bit. But once you kind of get the main four and kind of how they're playing around with each other, it draws you in because there, I'll use the word, there is a lot of intrigue. And so it's human in the sense that I think there's a lot of easily understood themes and you're tracking it with each brother. But I'm only about 200 pages in. So why are you holding the trash?
I've got a bonus book when we're done with Books and Business.
Are you going to throw it in there?
No, I've got another book I want to mention on Books and Business.
Okay.
I looked down the trash can and I just noticed that in the trash can, there's a copy of Real Marriage by Mark Driscoll, Tim.
Oh dear.
Can I officially say this is a Shackstack book? I just looked at it. I'm like, why do you have this in your trash?
So we had a White Elephant gift exchange for the seminary.
Oh, no way.
And so there was an exchange of gifts. Well, I didn't get it. My son Zach did. And I was like, no, son. And I already have a copy.
Sorry, I was trying not to cut off. I hope.
No, we're good. We're good. So I think we should move into our reading plans for the year. I will go ahead and start. So just to get us rolling. So what I have decided to do is I'm trying to simplify reading. So I have in the last like 2 or 3 years, I think have aimed at lots of books and I'm kind of going the opposite. So I'm going to have a main book for each month of the year.
Ooh.
And then along with the main book, I have two kind of like tertiary books that it's like, okay, these are there too, but if you're only gonna finish one, it's this main book.
This is it. I love this.
And so I haven't filled in the whole schedule yet, but along with that, actually it was Dr. Boyd who turned me on to Close Reads, which is another wonderful podcast that you could follow about reading. They also have one called The Daily Poem, or is it Daily Poem? Yeah.
Yes, The Daily Poem,
which they just changed a little bit. So like there's a paywall to some of it, which
that's
is
right. Yeah. The Tuesday, Thursday episode, you have to have a subscription, but you can still get Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
I will say, and they use Substack for a lot of their stuff. I did subscribe, to the Close Read Substack. And if you're going to spend money in that realm, I think it's worth your time, but you know, I'm in a different season of life than a lot of people. So, you know, what's okay for me might not be worth it to anybody else, but all that to say is they have about, I think it's 8 or 9 titles that they're going to go through on Close Reads podcast. And I just decided that those are going to make it into my list too. And so the two books I've got here in front of me, The Brothers K is my main book for January. And then one of the Close Reads is it's by Thornton Wilder, The Bridge of San Luis Rey. And it won a Pulitzer Prize. I have started it. I have low considerations at this point, but you know, my goal is to read it and then listen to their podcast, talk about it, and then, you know, see why they thought it was important that people read or think about it. And so a couple other highlights on my list here. I'm going to go through one of the classics of classics, Iliad, Odyssey, Aeneid, all make it onto the main category, even though I've already read them before, but they're worth it. So they're getting there again. This is a close reads ad, Wuthering Heights. I guess there's some really interesting ones in the summer, which for the left field stuff, I'm going to read Orthodoxy. That's the main book of July. Ooh, by Chesterton.
Yeah.
A very interesting one that I actually heard from Close Reads, The Righteous Mind. It's about why good people disagree on politics. It's probably a lot of psychological nonsense, but it got some, you know, it intrigued me enough that I'm going to put it on there. But you mentioned earlier, Tim, Tale of Two Cities. That's actually one of Close Reads. It's not a main book, though. I didn't put it on the main. But and then it's all in the last category, which is going to be probably the least important of them all. But I am going to read through all of Harry Potter. That's the goal.
Jealous.
I'm going to take the 7 books and leave them at work. And I think starting in February, it's kind of like 1 through 7. But it's none of them are the main book. So if I have to leave them behind, I'm willing to do it. But anyway, that's my reading plans. So really, really focusing on 12 main titles for the year. I do have 4 months open for my main book.
Ooh.
So I'm open to suggestions.
Oh, that's good.
But so for right now, I've got the first 8 settled. So
I love that plan. Because I think in the past we've tried to like rack up as many as we could. And I was watching some YouTube video on reading, and they were making the point that sometimes it's better to read fewer books, but read them well. And so like varying it. So I'm excited to see how you're,
yeah.
I'm excited. This is
going
to be good.
So now as we start going around the table, this is where I foreshadowed earlier. Along with your reading plans, I would like you to give, and it can be succinct.
Oh, boy.
But I want you to try to answer the question, why should I read?
Why?
Why? It's like we're putting reading plans together. So like as you talk about your reading plan, why are you doing it in the first place?
Sure. So I don't really have a reading list. Sorry. I was thinking more writing than reading, but
it's cool.
So as far as my plans for reading, I plan to read my Booksing Day books. I've actually, kind of funny, you guys mentioned your Booksing Day books in your Books and Business. I've actually read mine as well. I've been reading pieces of them. But,
nice.
So coming into having multiple books to read, that's one of the pieces. I've read pieces of all of my Booksing Day books. And then I have some more academic titles. So what am I looking at this? What am I looking to read this year and why? Well, I really want to try to do more writing. So because I'm writing, that's going to then govern what I'm reading.
Sure.
And then as far as what I'll be reading or planning to read this year, I am generally looking at what books have just been released. And I try to read pieces of, usually it's often like survey reading. Sometimes macro reading, very little micro reading, to use Nicelli's categories. So when I'm writing, though, then I'm doing much more micro reading. So why read? Well, as an academic, it's my responsibility. I consider it to be something I have to do. Not that I don't like it. I do enjoy it, and I want to do it. But why read? Because it's needful for me to do my job well. As a bookstore manager, I'm reading new books that are coming out all the time. And when I say reading, I use that word very loosely. Often it's looking at the table of contents and scanning through a few things. But survey type reading. And so why read? That would be one reason. Another is just so that I know what's going on in the world. Like when you're reading, you have a different barometer on what's going on. So for example, Secret Lives of Booksellers and Librarians, This is the book that Carter got me for Booksing Day.
That's such a great title.
The first section, okay, is talking.
Has it been good?
I mean, it's left, so yeah, everybody's the first section is, to be a bookseller, you have to play detective. Okay, so it's about booksellers, and every one of the short stories, because there's a bunch of short stories, every single one of them, I should back this up. I'm reading through, and after I get near the end of the section, I'm like, every single one of these has been a woman. And so then I'm like, I should check. There was one guy. So it's okay. Like, okay, that's kind of a fascinating demographic. And was that the printer, publisher, or is that just a barometer of the industry? Okay, that this is something that's predominantly female owner led, so on and so forth. And where did you buy this book from?
A female owned bookstore.
Exactly. Yep.
The Wandering Raccoon.
The Wandering Raccoon. Okay, so
Grimes, Iowa.
Iowa.
We were out doing Christmas, looking at Christmas lights, and we followed the Des Moines Register's, like, here's a bunch of places for 2024. Every single place we went to three of them, was not true. And we drove all the way to Grimes. All the way, Charlie, to look at some lights, and there's no lights on the house at all. Because here's really cool houses. They have like the tune in the radio and all that. So we're like, well, let's go home, and we're like, hey, let's go by that bookstore. So we drove by Wandering Raccoon to see where it was. So it was closed, obviously.
There's a wonderful pho restaurant right next door too.
Sorry to interrupt you, Tim.
That's okay.
The story.
And I will answer the question. Yes, when I went to Wandering Raccoon Books, I also ate pho at that restaurant.
Oh, man. I haven't had pho in a long time. I could totally.
Anyway,
should we get pho today, guys?
No, we should talk about our reading plans.
Yeah, our reading plans. So what am I going to read this year? I'm not entirely sure. I have ideas on like That Hideous Strength. I tried to read a classic. I tried Tale of Two Cities. I didn't get too far. My son just read Tale of Two Cities, which is why Tale of Two Cities. And does that have something to do with like the French Revolution too?
Yes.
Okay. We. It's actually don't know.
Loosely. It's not.
Because my son was explaining it a little bit to me, and I'm like, sounds like he's riffing on the French Revolution. And my son was along those same lines. So, and it gets back to the whole conversation about there's more going on. But I want to just kind of summarize. There's one book that I do want to read. It's called The Bronze Circle, and it's a fiction book. So it'd be more of a fun read. And so it was actually written by my aunt. And I'm looking forward to reading it and then talking about it on the podcast.
Oh,
yeah. So there we go. It's like a fantasy.
Did you answer why read? Why to read?
Well, I kind of did because I have to read. It's part of my job.
Gotcha. Okay.
It's not that I don't like it. I do like it. And I think it's good and helpful. And I think you should read, even if it's not your job. But for me, you know, why do you read? I don't know. It's kind of simple. I'm writing and I'm a bookseller.
My book list is not as specific as Charlie's either, but I did think through this a little bit before the start of the new year. I have an increasing appetite for and desire to read theology. You guys have all read a lot of theology in your seminary training. I haven't read as much. I am, you know, I'm a product of faith, so I do have some Bible college background, but my advanced education is in literature. And so in the mornings, then I'll be reading something theological. I have a book that is by Michael Reeves that highlights 12 theologians you should know.
Oh, nice.
And so I've been reading a little bit of that, but what I want to do is read some of the original works of the theologians that he's referencing. So, you know, for example, one of the first ones is Justin Martyr. So maybe reading a work by Justin Martyr, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
And then in the afternoons, I want that to be, that's generally more time related to my profession. And then in the evenings, at least at the start of the year here, I'm going to try to reserve about 30 minutes, maybe more, to just do pleasure reading. And I'm going to work through The Lord of the Rings because it's been a really long time since I've read The Lord of the Rings.
Awesome.
Again, that sets me kind of apart from the three of you who are much more familiar with that than I am. But
I've only read it once. I was actually thinking of reading through it again too, but with all the things to read, I don't know.
Yeah, and I'm going to listen to those as I read them. That's one thing I like to do with audiobooks is have the book in front of me, but then listen to somebody read it well. It does a lot for me as a reader. And so that's kind of the brief and kind of ill-defined description reading plan for me.
Boom.
As far as why should we read, I don't want this to be a cop-out, but one of the answers to that question that Naselli gives is worth considering. He says, the most fundamental reason you should read is that you need God's words to truly live. And one thing I appreciate about his book is that he focuses on reading God's word. If you don't have time to read other things, read God's word and read theology. Amen. And he continues and he says, this is why Christians value reading so highly. The ability to read matters because God's words matter. This is the main reason that missionaries teach illiterate people how to read. And this is the main reason that Christian parents should train their children to read. We want others to be able to read so that they can feast on the words of life. Beyond that, I read for pleasure. I love stories. I just enjoy stories. I love poetry. Reading and seeing how words, you know, conjure meaning and how they're put together beautifully. So that's another crucial reason to read.
I like that you said words conjure meaning. I thought that was a really good statement. All right. So this is funny. We didn't have this planned into this topic until like 2 or 3 days ago on the text chat we have. But before that, I think it's because I was sharing so many Lewis quotes. My reading list for this year is going to have a theme. And so you've already heard these quotes. But Lewis says this, he says, an unliterary man may be defined as one who only reads a book once. And I think I quoted that enough and talked about it enough last year that I thought maybe I should reread some books. And so then on Booksing Day, I was reading a book that Melissa got me, which was the Dorning the Dark book, which I had read before. And I was like, oh, I'll reread it. And it was really good. And I know that like rereading is important. So I decided this is going to be the great and mythic year of rereading for me. Ooh. I'm going to try to reread as many of my books as I can. So I will read some new books, but my goal is to create a list and reread as many books as I can. And so I've already started a list. And so these are some of the titles. This is not totally. The Hobbit, The Wardrobe, and The Great War. Gifting that to you. My mom heard that. Yeah. She went out and bought it and she's enjoyed it. I'm like, I got to read that again. I only read that one time. Trusting God by Jerry Bridges. That book is short, but takes a long time to read because it's really, really good soul work. Deep Work by Cal Newport. That's a classic, and I really like that. On Guard by William Lane Craig. He has a student edition that you can hand out to unbelievers, which I might read that one this time. That Hideous Strength by C.S. Lewis, my favorite novel of his. Surprised by Joy. Absolutely love that book. I think I've read or listened to that one like 6 times, but I should read it. How to Read a Book by Mortimer Adler's on there. But now I wonder if I should actually add that as one of my new books, the one by Naselli, because I think that sounds way,
flip it,
way better. The Stranger by Camus, because that came out a couple weeks ago. And then there's more that I keep thinking of. but Adorning the Dark has been a really great experience to reread. So this year, my plans are to reread as many of my books as I can. Why should you read? I think if you're not reading, someone's helping you think. Someone's discipling you. But if it's just media and entertainment, it's very, very likely not a good source. I mean, if all you ever watch are lectures on YouTube, that's probably fine. But I think that reading shapes how you think and it shapes what you love. And so if you can read good books, especially if you can read them and talk about them with your friends, like we tried to do on the podcast, on the long haul, like on the long view of your life, you're going to be a better and different person. And if you even think about, Charlie, one of your favorite sections where you behold Christ and then you become like him, reading is a way to behold by looking at it. So I think you should read for that reason. I also think you should read because it's hard. It's way easier to like sit back and passively consume stuff, but that doesn't mean that that's the good thing. And so by disciplining yourself to read, eventually you begin to love it, but also it does take effort. So I think that's my plan. Oh, and then I just want to share, I've been watching videos on a YouTube channel called Park Notes. The guy who runs the channel is Parker Setecase. I don't know who this guy is, but he went to Southern at one point, I guess, and he's done some philosophy and theology work. And he's all about paper notebooks. And so that's why I got on the channel. he has a way he logs his reading. So I have also created a reading notebook. You can see here, it has a pen that takes notes and books really well, a fountain pen, because I like to write in fountain pens. And then I have all the books that I want to start or have started on this page. And I've got like 4 or 5 pages for it. And then there's just this simple daily log where you write like the date, what book you read, how many pages, and then you circle the total. And then at the bottom, I'll just add my averages. So I'm going to try this. You did this years ago, some form of this, and I tried it and it didn't work for me. And so then now I've got this little goober here and I'm this little notebook and I'm like, oh, that's kind of fun. So I'm going to try to, log. I'm trying not to get hung up on it if I don't, but I'm going to try to log.
Yeah. It's tough when you try to track reading and pages and cause then you fall behind and then there's like the survivor's guilt, you know, or you got to like make it up. And
I should say, I don't have a page or book goal at all. Yeah. This is merely to record and look back. That's it.
Yeah.
And I think that helps me because it's just, I'm recording what I read. And one day if I want, I can add it up. But as long as I don't feel too terrible.
Yeah. And so I'm going to start by answering the question that I prompted you with, and then I'll get into my writing goals. So I think we're made to think.
Amen.
And so when we think through reading, and you could put writing in here too, it's an intentional activity where we're being human. And so like, it's one of the most human things that we could do as creatures of God is to have a very intentional activity where we focus on goodness and truth and beauty. And so reading in general is good because we're being human. We're acting as God has made us to act. Mm. But then reading good books is just an accelerator to, you know, the beholding, like you're looking at what you need to look at.
Yes.
To be fully human. Mm. Not as if someone who doesn't read is not fully human, but you're living out part of the purpose God has made for you, which is, I think, a lot of universities when they study books like this, what is it called?
Humanities.
And I've always kind of puzzled at that title, but I think now I finally get it. It's like, it's a very human endeavor as one of God's creatures to focus, think, contemplate on truth and goodness and beauty. And I really like what Dr. Boyd said is primarily the thing we should be reading and thinking on is scripture. It is the classic. But there's a lot of other great things to do too. And, you know, none of us are monasticizing, you know, we're going to live in modern life just fine. So writing goals, off air, I said, well, I don't think I really have any. Having a book just get published is really fun. And I'm kind of just like, okay with like living in the it's done moment.
But are you going
to
go?
Well, I think you should try to write some shorter articles on discipleship and try to get them published in a few different ways. That would be really helpful.
Well, so to add to, so I am still, I'm on the precipice of finishing that Doctor of Ministry, which will include a project. And I'm trying to think through what that will be. I think it will probably be, well, it will be some type of written thing. And so really wouldn't need to start working on that until 2026. But I think maybe trying to get a head start on some of that now. And then I am trying, Dr. Boyd, to have a sonnet a month. So starting with, I have the 3 sonnets that I've kind of worked on previously, and I'm kind of refurbishing them because I realized I didn't really understand what I was doing. And so January sonnet, I've already kind of reworked the original. It's just, it's not good. So you listen to like really good sonnets and how they flow. And what I really struggle with the poetry of a sonnet is like ending at the end of the line. So you've got the octet and the sestet. And I, it's really hard for my mind to bridge a coherent thought across multiple lines while maintaining the meter and the rhyme scheme. So it's a very difficult activity. And, anyway, so that's, other than like maybe a big project, the next manuscript of a book, that's kind of like the mini thing that I'm kind of working on is a sonnet a month for the year.
So last year I had, oh, go ahead.
No, I just want to jump in and say, I listened to last year's New Year's ideas, and I just want to publicly say how cool it is that last year, one of Charlie's goals was to get a good manuscript of his book. And then what are we talking about today? It's in the bookstore. Mm-hmm. So I just think that's a really great accomplishment. I just wanted to highlight that. Well, that's awesome. Done.
Got one of them done.
All right. Back
I
to
also two. Had some other goals for the year, and I'm approximately the same size I was last year.
But you're in Grimes now.
And, you know, move about the same amounts I do last year. But I did get a book published.
You got a book written. So. Come on, host.
Horrendous. So last year I talked about trying to publish my article, Meaning of Desire, in Genesis 3, 16, 4, 7, and Song 7, 10. I sent that article into WTS, the Westminster Theological Seminary Journal. I think it's just Westminster Theological Journal. And I sent that in March or something, and I wrote them in December. I've written them a few times, and it's still in the review process, and so I continue to wait. I know there's some changes I want to do to that article, and so this Christmas break I started working on it again. I opened it back up and made some of those changes, and I'm still working on it. So hopefully that'll get published this year. I don't know. Like, if they reject it, then I'm going to have to start again with another journal, and then you have another 9-month wait time or whatever. You know, it just takes forever. So I talked about an article that I wrote, The Relative Insignificance of Sex, Kicking Freud Out of the Church. I'm kind of tabling that one right now. Yeah, you were. And I'd still like to do something with that idea, but I'm not sure where it's going to go, whether it's an article or if I want to make it something a little bigger. As far as my writing goals for this year, I'm thinking more articles as opposed to books, but we'll see how everything ends up working out. I have an article I am working on. I've started this last summer. I'm continuing to work on it as well. And that has to do with de-Christologizing the Song of Songs. So I've mentioned that a few times here on the podcast. I have been denied at the Evangelical Theological Society's annual meeting on several occasions. So somebody recommended that I pursue presenting a paper at the regional meeting, which is at Cedarville University in March. And so I'm hoping to present that article in March. So those are kind of some of my writing goals right now. And I have a lot of ideas, but I'm like, okay, I need to prioritize like two things. One, that one article, it needs to get actually printed. I wrote it like 2 years ago and it's been denied by Jets, and I don't know what Westminster is doing with it. So I need to get that one printed, and then I need to get this other one done. So those are my goals.
I have been writing more kind of popular level stuff for the last couple of years, most of it, a lot of it for the school, actually. I have a popular article I'm working on right now for a magazine. But in terms of academic writing, I'm in this kind of strange place. So my training largely was in American literature. And interestingly, American literature is the thing that I kind of don't like to teach much anymore. Because I teach British literature, I teach in the honors program, so I teach great texts. I mean, these are all the things that I really enjoy. And there's lots of good things in American literature. I'm kind of stuck with, do I try to do something scholarly? And if so, what? Or do I turn my attention more towards writing something that's longer form, but maybe for a more popular audience? I've had some ideas about writing kind of a layman's guide to poetry, but there's a lot of those kinds of books that exist already, not in our circles necessarily. But so I'm just thinking through some of those things. There's a book idea that I do have that's scholarly, that is of some interest, and I've had it probably for 10 years. So I maybe need to start working on that. I have a couple of drafts of what could be chapters that are conference papers that I presented, and I could develop those this year and kind of get a few chapters done and then have a proposal to actually send off somewhere and see. But so yeah, just thinking through a lot of those things, not exactly sure where it'll go. But
okay, so for writing goals, it was interesting last year, reading back or listening back through our episode, my goal was sort of just to keep writing because the blog was a great place for me to sort of process life. And I have largely maintained a 2-post-a-month schedule since midsummer. I missed December. I hit it a couple days late. So that's been a good exercise. I think what's happened is, as I've kept trying to do that, I'm beginning to like naturally think in, oh, that would be an easy topic that would be helpful to people kind of a thing. So I want to kind of, I want to maintain that. I'm going to step back before I explain my writing goals. In the past, I've been frustrated at different points in the year. In fact, we were talking a little bit about something close to this at one point where you just don't feel like you get anything done and there's lots of grading or there's this or that or whatever. And it dawned on me like 15 years ago or 10 years ago, I'm drinking coffee with Danny Capon at a Starbucks. And he said to me, you should think in seasons, like there's seasons of life. And I remember that kind of planting in my mind, but not doing a whole lot. And something clicked about 2 months ago that there's different times in my life where I feel like I'm more productive at writing. And there's other times where I'm just not getting anything done. We kind of talk about it with like grading and finals week and whatnot. So I stepped back from my life and I thought, as a teacher, what are my seasons? Melissa said one of the things she misses about the classroom is when she was in the kindergarten classroom, there's always like you're decorating the room for different seasons. There's the end of the school year, the beginning of the school year, the summer this. And she kind of missed that passage of time. And it clicked with me. Oh, I have that as a teacher. So I thought through my life at a seasonal level. And I think my life has six terms or seasons. It basically starts when you have in service in August. And then that month leading up to school is like prep. That's like term one. Then you have the fall semester. That's like the second term or the second season. Then for me, it's Christmas break. And it's like a very short season that's very different. So each season is different in some significant way. Then I have spring semester, which is like number four. Number five is I have 2 weeks of really intense summer school I teach. And then the sixth season, the last one, is my 2 months of summer break. So I started thinking, hey, I should try to schedule my life around these times. So this is the first year I've ever tried to have goals. And people always talk about goals and I don't understand how that works, but I thought, oh, now that I understand how my seasons go, I could probably plan some stuff out. So I have Christmas break goals. I have spring semester goals, but I don't have any summer yet, summer school yet or summer break goals. But I did think, you know what, over Christmas break, I've had some writing goals, and my writing goals are to outline one book. I'd like to write a book on Bible study. And I'd also like to write a book on suffering, and I don't know which one to do. So I've made strong attempts to outline both. And you know what's happened? The Bible study outline, Lewis says, I don't know what I think until I see what I say. Like he has to write to think. As I'm outlining this book idea, it clicked. I think I might have a slightly unique way to look at Bible study. And it was very natural. It was in there all along and I didn't see it. So I have the beginnings of an outline. I don't know if I'm going to finish it by the end of this week, which would be the end of this term for me or season. I've done a little bit on my suffering book. Actually, I've done quite a bit on my suffering book, but I don't have a whole outline. But I have like the elements, the passages I would use, some anecdotes that I would tell. I've kind of got all that grouped in one place. And then I have a fiction work I started. I wrote a little bit of it a couple of years ago. I wrote some stuff, didn't share it. And then the other day I was thinking about it, I realized I could put these four little things together and it's kind of all the same. So I have like about 10 pages of skips and starts. I sent it to you too. If you haven't had a chance to read it, it's no problem. So that's my goal. So over Christmas break, my goal is to get one book mostly outlined, even if it never is the real true outline. And then during the spring semester, I want to write three chapters, even if they're draft, even if they stink, and then turn those into episodes and or blog posts. So that'll be my writing goals.
Awesome. Yeah. And we probably will have some more bloggy things that we do throughout the year. That was something we wanted to do last year and we actually did.
Yeah, we did.
So, you know, Tim and I had a couple that got up there and
the ink things. That's so good.
Ink things. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And maybe we could have another contributor to that at some point. Maybe we'll see. I don't know. So let's have a final meditation in God's word. This will be as quick as possible since we've gone over an hour here, but Philippians 4, over the Christmas season, we're talking a lot about joy. So rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say rejoice. That's verse 4. Verse 5, and this is just as I read, I usually try to read, you know, larger chunks and kind of think about what captures my mind. So as I was reading on all that joy stuff of the last month, verse 5 kind of jumped out to me. Let your reasonableness be known to everyone. The Lord is at hand. And so that word reasonableness, obviously when we hear the word reason, we're talking about we're thinking about mind. And so here's the kind of standard definition of that term: not insisting on every right or letter of law or custom, yielding, gentle, kind, courteous, tolerant.
Wow.
And so right along with being joyful, being reasonable, or yielding, gentle, kind. And so it's one of those, I think this term, it's really hard to define it, but I think you might understand it better when you see it. And so, you know, when you start setting goals for the year, there's different types of people. There's people that are letter of the law, it's all in or nothing. And I don't think that would be a reasonable virtue. And so what would it look like to be yielding and gentle and kind and courteous and tolerant in that respect? But then as you start interacting with other people, here's the way I think it needs to be. Here's the way they think it needs to be. Am I reasonable that there are times to make exceptions to the law or custom, the letter of the law? And do I understand when that should be? Like when to be gentle, when to be kind or yielding, courteous to another person? And I think it's a thought that is worth meditating on. Am I a reasonable person? And I want to distinguish that from logical. Someone who's logical could be very mechanical and they always think the right way and they always make a logical action. And because it's logical, that's what's right. But you could be very logical and mechanical in that sense and not be reasonable. And that's not what's being exalted here. It's not like a very logical way of living, that you're very consistent in how you do things. It's that you understand what maybe should be done most of the time. You understand and you're wise in how you interact with people, and it's a willingness to yield. And this comes up over in James. The wisdom of from above is what?
It's moral things. It's not logical. It's peaceful, pure.
Well, and it actually specifically says there, wisdom from above is willing to yield. And if you look at that list in James 3, it's actually this same word that comes up. And so wisdom is not, I know what's right and I always do it. Like, and obviously want to do what's right, but it's not like this letter of the law, always following the law. That's not a wise life. Wisdom would have more discernment to understand that there's times where there's reasonableness, that there's a yielding to the exception. And that's what makes wisdom difficult, is because people want answers to everything. Well, can I listen to that? Can I watch that? Can I do this? Can I not do that? They want a black and white, and wisdom isn't always like that. Tim doesn't like what I just said.
No, I like that. That's fine. I think there's some truth there, but I was going to supplement too. A lot of people want wisdom, so then they have an easy, comfortable life.
Sure.
If their motivation is wrong. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. And so just a thought there. So you want to rejoice, but then you want to be reasonable. And so what does that look like in your life to be someone who does not insist on every right? What does it look like for you to be yielding, gentle, kind, courteous, and tolerant? Even if that's not the most logical answer, what does that look like in your relationships to be a reasonable person? And I'm not exactly sure yet if the next phrase is meant to be read alongside of this command. So verse 5 read, come on. Let your reasonableness be known to everyone. The Lord is at hand. So the statement that the Lord is at hand, is that some foundational principle or motivation to why I need to be reasonable? Does it go with the next phrase? Do not be anxious about anything. Why? Because the Lord's at hand. I haven't really decided how I parse through that yet. But just verse 5 by itself is worth we're thinking through, and I'll cap it with this thought. Certainly, if we're to be reasonable, the Lord is also reasonable. And in what ways does the Lord not insist on every right that he has? And in what ways does he yield? And in what ways is he gentle? What ways is he kind and courteous and tolerant? And if you think about, well, what does it look like for me to be reasonable? A helpful start might be to think through how is God, or how has God been reasonable? If this is a virtue to be embodied by the Christian, certainly we could find examples of it in God and the life of Christ as well. And so just maybe a starter devotion there. I think really the fruit of that will be you thinking through that in your own lives. But let your reasonableness be known to everyone. The Lord is at hand. And so as we kind of kick off a new year, we talk about all these great goals. How does one be reasonable? How does one yield and be gentle and kind and courteous and tolerant in 2025? Hopefully that is a nice thought and challenge for you, listener. Thanks for wading through all of our reading and writing discussion today, and we'll see you next week on the Thinklings Podcast. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Thinklings Podcast. We would love to hear from you. If you have any feedback, suggestions, or potential topics that you'd like us to discuss, you can contact us through our email, thinklingspodcast@gmail.com. Remember, don't let this conversation end with this podcast. Read good books, talk about them with your friends, and always continue to cultivate your mind. See you next time on the Thinklings Podcast.